Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is 95.7 The Game.
Oh, yes. Who are these new voices, do you ask? Well, that's Stephen Langford and Tommy Call in with you from 3 to 6. And just a couple of young guys here, Tommy,
yes,
doing
sir.
Our thing.
Yes, sir. Who are you again?
Stephen Langford.
Yeah, okay.
We just
we'll
met.
We'll get used to it. Yeah,
we just met about 10 minutes ago.
We'll get used to it, yeah.
Yeah, we just met about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, we'll figure this thing out.
Not really. Not
Child,
really.
Please.
Wes already going in on the drops. We will be joined on the Dialpad guest line by Brad Doolittle, who is an MLB writer and analyst for ESPN, coming up here at 3:15, along with NFL writer for CBS Sports in Jeff Kerr at 4:15. And, of course, Jennifer Lee Chan, you know her, you love her. She covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area. She'll be joining us at 5:15. We do have some news out of Raider camp that just sweeped Twitter. We'll get into that a little bit. But Tommy, real quick, now people might know me from doing the 5 a.m. show, doing the if you've ever been up at 5 a.m., if you're on the road right now. But with you, you have been doing some crazy good work.
Well, thank you.
Down from Niners training camp. You've been going down there every single day. And yeah. I really think that we should get the people knowing who we are, because with you, man, you've been doing work down there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm happy someone, you know, outside of my mom thinks that. So, you know, I appreciate that. But I've been out at 49ers training camp here and there, getting a peek at everything. It's been a great experience. Obviously, I do a lot of writing for 957thegame.com for those who don't know, and some other places out there. But I think this 49ers training camp, it's been very interesting from multiple angles, because first and foremost, you know, day one, they're talking about pressure and expectations, right? You know, we're talking about the show and writing down stuff about the 49ers. Expectations is, I think, the most used word that we constantly talk about. And a lot of that is to do with Jimmy Garoppolo. How's he looking post-injury? These wide receivers. You know, the list goes on and on and on. And training camp has showed almost a mixture of those things, which is a little good and bad, because we have seen a hampered Jimmy Garoppolo not look maybe himself. We've seen some uncomfortability with the receivers. And then you look at the defensive line, they've dominated when they've been healthy. So it's been a mix of things. And I'm excited to, you know, talk to Jennifer later on in the show to see how Denver was. I'm really interested in seeing how this team traveled. You know, was there skirmishes, things like that? Just that's a big step for a team in their building process. And this team has a lot of young players. And I mean, it's such an exciting time with football being around the corner, too.
Right. And with that depth, we're going to be asking her all about that, because obviously they've seen a couple of offensive linemen go down. Nick Bosa clearly hasn't been able to practice because of his high ankle sprain, and hopefully he'll be ready for week one. I'm curious, because we've heard different things, different reports that he may be ready for week one, but then John Lynch came out and said he may not be. So I'm excited to ask her about that. But down in training camp, though, one thing that's kind of been the difference between this year and last year is just the fact that you don't really have so much of an entirely new team. Richard Sherman was a newly acquired guy who was expected to be the leader really right away. Could you tell when you were at training camp that pretty much there was just that difference between year one and year two as far as just veteran leadership is concerned?
Well, I think it's a mixture, because yes, a lot of these guys are all returning, but we've seen this team get demolished by injuries. We haven't really seen the full 53 out there. The one guy, and when you talk about leadership, you know, DeForest Buckner is a guy that gets mentioned around the locker room a lot as such a great leader, you know, when you're talking to anybody on the defensive line. But a guy to me that just really stood out, and you talk to the coaches and you can see it, it's not fake, you can see it on training camp, is Fred Warner. I mean, I talked to some of the guys here on air, and I say this guy might be the leader of the defense. And to me, he's been one of the bigger guys to make that big step, where Richard Sherman, I think there's such high expectations of his leadership that it almost goes unnoticeable, if that makes sense, you know, because it is a really young secondary, right? So everybody knows who 25 is when he's on the when he's on the field 24/7. Are we going to see that when the season rolls around? How is he going to handle it? But the most impressive from a leadership standpoint has been Fred Warner to me.
He's made that biggest leap.
Yeah, he's running around with a hair on fire type of guy, getting guys in the right position. And Quan Alexander is kind of a bottled up hype machine himself. And so those two are playing next to each other. And I think, you know, Fred Warner, what he was kind of an, I don't want to call him like an unheralded draft pick from last season, but yeah. You didn't really know what you expected from him. All eyes were always on Reuben Foster when he was out on the field. He was kind of looked at that young best linebacker, new linebacker kind of thing, where Fred Warner now is kind of getting that treatment to a bit, but he has to step into that, right? He needs to hold himself to those expectations. And playing next to Quan Alexander, I think that can bring that out of him, because Quan doesn't stop talking. He doesn't stop chirping. He's running around. He's dancing the music. I mean, yeah. A ball of energy out there. And I think playing next to Fred Warner, that can make an impact on his leadership.
I mean, from last year, you mentioned it. We all had eyes on Reuben Foster, and yeah. We didn't know what to make of this third round pick, this Fred Warner guy coming out of nowhere.
He's a coverage linebacker, athletic. You know, that's kind of what we expected of him. And now we're seeing the full package.
I mean, that, for me at least personally, I think that's been my one biggest question, because with Quan Alexander, he's had some issues staying on the field with the Buccaneers as far as injuries are concerned. And with Fred Warner, I feel like he's got to be that one guy. He's at least been one of the more stable young guys that they've had, just as far as being healthy and being able to play. I mean, I guess we'll just throw this question right off the bat. You think he's going to be wearing that green dot going ahead now that he knows Saleh's defense more than pretty much any of these other linebackers?
Yeah, I 100% think so. And I think they've already made that distinction over Quan Alexander. And I think, honestly, Quan Alexander, like, he's a nice player, right? He's not this world beater, all pro type of linebacker. The reason a lot of the times that made him good, he's playing behind Gerald McCoy. He's playing next to Lavonte David, who's one of the most underrated players in the National Football League. I mean, he is an outstanding linebacker. And you put Quan Alexander next to him, this really, really fast guy, kind of let him do his thing. Well, hopefully Fred Warner can be Lavonte David light, and still you let Quan Alexander do what he does best. And, you know, you don't put all that pressure on his shoulders to be the green dot guy in the middle, making the calls, everything. You let him play, you know, freely.
Flying around the ball, good.
Yeah. And you put the pressure on Fred Warner, because we saw he could do it last year. We saw that Fred can handle a lot of what this defense can do. And now he's playing behind really talented defensive linemen, so that should only help him out more.
So we move on from the defense and we go to the offense, and the guys who have been making names for themselves are obviously second round pick Deebo Samuel and third round pick Jalen Hurd. Yeah. Jalen Hurd obviously with a couple of touchdowns in game one of the preseason, but Dante Pettis has really been the one that's kind of been talked about the most out of all of them, and not in really a positive light. What did you see out of Dante Pettis when you were at training camp?
Man, it's a very curious case with Dante Pettis, where sometimes to me he looks like a definitive number one wide receiver. I'll be honest. I loved him out of college. I think he was the number one wide receiver on my board last year. You know, I got to see him play a lot out here in the Pac-12. I'm a fan of the Washington Huskies, so specifically watching him a lot, I had high expectations for him last season. I thought playing next to Pierre Garçon would do a lot for him. But again, inconsistencies, and that's kind of transferred over to this training camp, where he will make a great play. He'll destroy a defensive back with a great route. You know, this is a creative, gadgety type of player.
Right.
And then the next play, a dropped ball, you know, or running the wrong way, or just some little small thing. I understand that comes with youth, but at one point with Dante Pettis, this is a guy they traded up for in the second round. That's got to go away right now. You're playing with another young guys. You're not Deebo Samuel. You're not a rookie anymore kind of thing. You have guys. You have to step up. There isn't, you know, outside of Marquise Goodwin, there's not a Pierre Garçon in that wide receiver room. Dante Pettis has to step up and be that guy. And I haven't really seen it yet, but I still think that he can put it together with what his skills are on the football field. But it's one of those things that he's going to have to kind of do, because whatever you have to say about Kyle Shanahan, Wes Welker, Miles Austin, these are some talented coaches around him.
Right.
Now the pressure's kind of on him to make that step.
Guys who know what it's like to be a number one wide receiver, whether it was Miles Austin with the Cowboys or Wes Welker when he was with the Pats and the Broncos both.
And you know Kyle Shanahan's going to be drawing him open. I mean, he was able to draw guys like Kendrick Bourne open. Trent Taylor looked like, you know, a solid pro, which these guys are questionable to make other teams, right? Where Kyle Shanahan's making these guys look good. Now you have a bunch of second round picks, a third round pick, guys he handpicked with all this skill in the world. So getting them open shouldn't be a problem, right? outside of, you know, the physical skills. So if he can put that together, I think you could see potentially a number one fringe two receiver.
We saw that along with Jalen Hurd. I mean, those two touchdowns. I mean, the first one, it was just, I feel like Shanahan just schemed him open and to the point where if he did not catch that pass within the 10-yard line, then you would have just had some questions about the third rounder. Now, he did knock over the safety and run him over, and that's really what people got excited for. But those two plays, the back shoulder fade from Beathard in the shotgun, but in that first play where it was just really a throw to him in the flat, it was just kind of a little slant.
Or drag.
And then just throwing it to him, I feel like it just would have been a problem if he did not catch those balls.
The thing that stood out to me the most is I was at that game, and you know, how often have we talked about, you know, Steven, you and I, even off the air, talking about football and everything in the 49ers, this conversation of their wide receiver core, what have they missed the most? Oh, it seems like for years now, at least under the Kyle Shanahan umbrella, even back to Anquan Boldin, they haven't had a playmaking wide receiver, a big play guy. And that doesn't have to mean a catch way down the field, a guy that can go make a play for you, and then a red zone target. Jalen Hurd and Deebo Samuel showed both of those things in this first preseason game. I understand it's against, you know, secondary defenders and things like that, and there was some problems that wasn't a perfect game played by either of them, but the two things that they were kind of brought to this team to do, they kind of showed Deebo with, you know, that little hesitation route where he destroyed the DB and was able to go up and pick that ball that was an underthrown by CJ Beathard. Honestly, if that's another receiver over these last couple of years, you go, he's not going to go get that football kind of thing, you know? And that's what Deebo did. And even, you know, he had another 45 play. He's getting handoffs, things like that. And then Jalen Hurd able to put the ball into the end zone, use his big body. He ran through two guys. He fended a guy off, you know, on that fade route, kind of showing the things they were drafted to do. And that specifically is a great sign.
So we're going to continue to discuss this throughout the show. We got more on the 49ers coming up. We'll have more on the Raiders too, because we do have a little news coming out of camp. But we are going to go to baseball as we go to the dial pad guest line next for Brad Doolittle, who is an MLB writer and analyst for ESPN. Who are we, you're wondering? That's Stephen Langford and Tommy Call here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Tommy and I are in here right now just crushing a couple of cans of Miller Lite, some sort of light beer. More beer!
This is like 90s nostalgia bottled up. I'm fired up right now.
This is such a great intro. We're coming in here all tough.
Oh, man.
All right. That's enough of Stone Cold here. We make our way to the dial pad guest line as we are joined by baseball writer and analyst for ESPN. He does some stuff for the NBA for them as well. How are we doing today, Brad?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I'm doing all right. So really, I just wanted to get your thoughts initially just on this new trade deadline, the July 31st deadline. Do you think this will make things more competitive in the next month and a half or so, since playoff contenders can't grab a star player as like a 2-month rental anymore at the end of August?
Well, I think it puts more of a premium on keeping guys healthy and avoiding catastrophic injuries, you know, because whereas before teams would kind of wait and see where they had guys that were on the IL and maybe hoping to be back at a certain point, but they weren't sure, then they might add depth in August, and they can't do that now unless they do it off of waivers, and I think we've already seen more of that, but yeah, I do. I think it changes it a little bit that, you know, you've got to keep your guys on the field and performing because you don't have that stopgap of being able to pick up guys.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, you know, about your thoughts on Farhan Zaidi. Do you believe that this season, his first season with the San Francisco Giants, will just be defined by not trading Madison Bumgarner? He's made some savvy moves. He's found some diamonds in the rough here, but it's going to be so easy if they don't make the playoffs. All the Monday morning quarterbacks will come out saying, you should have traded him. Is that kind of what we're going to deal with if they, you know, eventually don't make the playoffs?
I mean, it could be defined by that, but it could be defined in a positive way. You know, it's it's a way of saying, hey, I'm new to the organization, but I respect what the stalwarts that have been here for a while have done. And, you know, they were in position to make a run. They're still in position to make a run. I don't think that they're the best team. I don't think they have the best roster of the teams that are contending for the wild card. But, hey, if you're in position and you don't go for it, particularly when you've got a Hall of Fame manager in his last season and a franchise player, you know, I think that's really putting things off on the wrong note with the fan base. So, you know, look, I'm an analytics guy, but I don't think you have to make every decision with an organization in terms of how you're going to squeeze every last ounce of value from it. So I respect what Florian's done there. You know, he's a smart guy. And if the downside for making the decisions that he made was too great, he wouldn't have made those decisions.
So keeping it with Madison Bumgarner, right now before today's start, he had a 5-0 record with a 2.6 ERA in his 10 previous starts, and he seems to be unstoppable right now. Do you think the Giants are going to give him an extension for his contract, or are they just going to let him hit free agency?
Yeah, I mean, that's rough. I mean, it would be great. I mean, I have pitchers are always a little bit of a wild card when it comes to free agency. But, you know, now that he's made some adjustments and he's been throwing great, I would have no qualms about a team giving a good contract to Bumgarner. But after this season, you know, it's just hard to envision what an extension for him, how it would match the timeline for what Farhan's doing in terms of a rebuild. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be like an all-out Astros-Cubs-style rebuild. I don't think that's the way he operates. So, but I don't know that just in terms of deploying resources that a long-term extension for Bumgarner is going to be the way to go. So we'll see. You know, I mean, there's obviously a lot of extra value in having a guy that is the face of your franchise there for his entire career. So we'll see how it plays out. But, yeah, I just think when it comes down to it, if Bumgarner's looking to, you know, maximize what he can get for the duration of his career, I just don't know that the timeline of the Giants is the best fit for him right now.
You know, you said earlier you're an analytics guy, and I want to know what you thought of, you know, what you think of what's going on with Alex Dickerson and Mike Yastrzemski. Yeah, just totally butchered that specifically, but just did you kind of, I feel like they've just blown through expectations. Did you foresee any of this with maybe analytics or anything? I mean, these guys have really done an impressive job, and specifically they are two of the finds that Farhan's really, you know, made an impression with.
Yeah, before I answer that, let me ask you, do you guys out there, do you call him Yaz?
Yeah, we do, and we have another nickname for Alex Dickerson, which I don't know is too appropriate for radio.
Okay, I won't get into that. Well, actually, I think what's happened with Dickerson and Mike Yastrzemski is really encouraging, because this has been a hallmark of the Dodgers the last few years. It continues to be, and Farhan was a big part of that when he was there. That's in taking, you know, fringe guys that are maybe like 4A in another organization, and finding something that you can tweak with them and then turn them into 2, 3, 4 years of a really productive player. The Dodgers have done that time and again, as if they didn't have enough going for them resource wise. And the fact that Farhan's come in his first year and been able to do the same thing, like Mike, there was nothing in Mike Yastrzemski's performance record. This is a 28-year-old guy that would suggest that he was going to be a 600 slugger. But Farhan saw something and he brought him in, and he's been terrific. It's been a great story. So that's encouraging in that as the Giants rebuild their talent core with a younger base, that they're going to be able to find these sort of solutions, because Farhan's one of the best at doing that.
Now, obviously, you mentioned the Dodgers, and I think it's safe to assume that they're probably going to win the National League West, but who do you see winning the National League Central this year? Because it can either be the NL East, rather. It could either be the Nationals, the Phillies, even the Mets. Could they give the Braves a run for the NL East?
Well, I don't think the Mets are probably in the run for the division. I think the NL East is pretty much the Braves to lose. They would have to really have a collapse with their pitching staff to not win that division. And if they do blow that lead, then the Nationals are really the only team I could see catching up with them. The Central is, you know, it's a lot of mediocrity. It's a good division. The Pirates have collapsed, but beyond that, you've got four teams. People forget about the Reds, but the Reds, when you look at their run differential, if they had had better bullpen performance early in the season, they would be right in the thick of it too. So I kind of default to where I was in the preseason, where I just see the Cardinals as having the most complete roster in that division. Their bullpen has been terrific. You know, even after losing Jordan Hicks for the season, they've moved starter Carlos Martinez back to the bullpen, and he's been terrific in the end of the bullpen role. The only thing with them is their starting rotation has been up and down, but they have a lot of good arms. And that would have been a great spot for Bumgarner if the Giants and Cardinals would have matched up on that. But I actually like the way the Cardinals are playing. I think things are coming together for them, and they're my favorite for winning that division.
We're talking with Brad Doolittle of ESPN.com here on 95.7 The Game. And Brad, before we get you out of here, I wanted to ask you about, you know, we talked about Bruce Bochy. And is there a couple names that you have an eye on to be his eventual replacement? Because out here in the Bay Area, I mean, there's a lot of chatter specifically about one guy, and that's Joe Maddon. And do you see that potentially happening, or do you think they go a different route?
Yeah, you know, that's even being here in Chicago, and I'm in Chicago, if you weren't aware of that, but and being around the Cubs a lot, I do not have any sort of feel on what's going to happen with the situation there with the Cubs and Joe Maddon. I think he wants to stay. He just opened a new restaurant about a half a block away from Wrigley Field. So obviously he's planning on having a presence here for a while. I don't know that Joe Maddon, if the Giants are planning to go in and contend next year, I can see Joe Maddon making sense. If they think it's going to be a 2-3-4 year build, then I don't really see that. You know, I think what we're, you know, I don't really have a feel for what the Giants are going to be looking for, but I just kind of think that it's going to end up having be somebody with the Dodger ties. You know, they have a lot of guys like Gabe Kapler and Chris Woodward, the Rangers manager, who came up in a variety of roles that got, you know, involved in sort of translating the analytics from the front office onto the playing field. And, you know, I kind of feel like it's going to be someone in that mode, you know, so, we'll see. And then, you know, I don't know what the buzz is out there about Hensley Mullins. He's been kind of a perennial managerial candidate, highly respected in the game. So I don't know. I feel like he's going to get a manager's job at some point, but I don't know what the scuttlebutt has been out there in regards to him and the Giants.
Brad Doolittle, he's a baseball writer and analyst for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at BB Doolittle. Thanks for joining us, Brad.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
So there you go. Maybe not Joe Maddon. Maybe they could be hiring in-house. They could be hiring a Ron Wotus or a Hensley Mullins. Could be down to them too.
I honestly think that is this Giants run that we've seen of them actually putting together some wins here and contending for a wild card spot. One of the best parts of that is that we haven't had to hear this year-long who's going to replace Bruce Bochy kind of thing. Let him go out. Let him be the star. Not constantly, you know, how we saw with KD last year. I'm not saying it's at that level of, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? What are they going to do? What are they going to do? But
right.
That could have been maybe an effect if this team's 15, 20 games under 500 at this time. So I kind of like that for just to give Bochy his shine right now, why he deserves it on the way out.
Right. And I think that with Bochy too, it could be a part of the reason why they've been on this run going into the trade deadline on July 31st and after and beyond, and the fact that they actually have a chance to make a run at the wild card. Now, that also depends on how the National League's doing, because record-wise, the National League is nowhere really – it's not really that great, if I should say. So the Giants are kind of lucky with that. But going forward, though, you could make the argument that Bruce Bochy is – part of the reason why, just the fact that it's his last haul, his last hurrah, these guys that are new to the team. I always call them young guys. I keep forgetting that Yastrzemski and Dickerson, they're not that young in baseball standards. They're 28 and 29 years old, respectively. But going forward, I think they just understand the impact that Bruce Bochy's had for the Giants. So this run could be attributed to that.
Yeah, I think it's just, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they play tough, right? You'd have to look yourself in the mirror. in an ugly way if you weren't trying to go out there and give it your all specifically for this guy. And baseball seasons are long, right? But these guys are all competitors. That's why they're on this stage. And I just don't know how a competitor, you couldn't look at what Bruce Bochy's done knowing he's walking out the door at the end of this season and not kind of give it your all. I understand that might be a little cliche, rah-rah-ish, but yeah. I mean, it's the truth. I mean, even if you're the last guy on the roster and you're not going to get one rep out there, you want to show your best for him. You don't want his memory to go down badly, which it could have very well done, you right. know, and that's why, you know, what Brad told us about Farhan, even, you know, respecting the decisions of the guys who've been in the organization for a long time to not want to trade Bumgarner, to send Bucci out the right way.
Bucci, man.
I'm thinking of too much of a Jimmy Garoppolo, Gucci, yeah. You know, we're in football mode here, right. Getting so fired up, but got to switch it over to baseball because there's still some games left.
Right. Well, we still do have games left, but there is some football news that came out. And by the way, just in case you're wondering who you're listening to on the air right now.
Who are these guys?
Who are these people? Yeah. This is Stephen Leifert here with Tommy Call. Just a couple of young guys
trying to put
a good name out there for the millennials. That's the aim here,
Tommy.
Yeah,
that was all we were doing. We didn't really want to talk about sports at all today. We just wanted to kind of talk about millennials and sip our spritzes and hang out, drink our White Claws, you know, and just kick back in the studio.
Oh, my goodness. But
keep it chill.
There is news. Do keep your White Claws chill, people, by the way. Chill White Claws.
Stay in your lane.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you, Wes.
Fanboy.
So going on, though, we got a tweet from Paul Gutierrez of ESPN, quote, Mike Mayock says Antonio Brown is not at Raiders practice because he's upset with the helmet issue, says avenues for relief have been exhausted, and it is time for Brown to decide whether he's all in or all out.
I mean, just speaking about what we just talked about being a competitor, right. Antonio Brown, I mean, it's hard to not just be like, dude, what are you doing, honestly? I mean, it makes me think there's something bigger going on. Really, can this be about a helmet? Do you actually believe that, Steven?
I went into this with a little skepticism from our end because it's just very easy when you're looking at it just from afar. It's very easy to say, oh, yeah, Antonio's in the – like, what's he doing? Mm. Like, just play with the helmet mandated for you. What are you doing? But on his end, I was always of the opinion that if he wants his shut – I said shut. Mm. I did not say it wrong because – whew, I'm so scared of saying that name wrong on the radio. But he got his shut air advantage that's less than 10 years old, and he wanted that just due to comfortability with his vision, and he felt like it would make him see the field better.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's on you. That's totally fine. If you could find a way to work your way around that, then that's okay. But now that the NFL's rejected that, and even though he found a helmet that was from 2014, I believe. Even though he found that, the NFL has still rejected it. But the fact that he's still not showing up to practice, this is now where I'm starting to be just more on that side of Antonio. What are you doing?
Yeah, and it's crazy to me. I would love to know from his perspective. And this is where Hard Knocks comes in. And I was a little let down by last week because I want to know what Antonio, like, what do you mean you can't see? Like, really? Like, how does hundreds of wide receivers across the NFL and college never, like, I haven't heard anybody stand up on Twitter or old pro saying, yeah, I really can't see because of this. I don't understand that, right? It doesn't add up. Like, how are these receivers going out there every week wearing these different helmets? I think he needs to go with the single bar kicker helmet, full vision. That's what he needs to go with here. How awesome would that be if you saw Antonio Brown line up week one in silver and black, which is the single bar face mask helmet?
Right. I mean, that'd be something really that... I mean, I'm trying to picture, and I really want that to happen now. But it's kind of like if I had to make like a stupid little car comparison. I mean, it's like for me, I drive a Subaru Outback, right? Mm. And I've been driving that the entire time since I've been driving. My blind spot, I'm like used to looking over my shoulder and seeing a blind spot.
Gotcha.
One time I had to drive a Chrysler 300, and even though the vision was still... you know, in the blind spot was still okay. I couldn't really, like, I turned around and something was different. Something was off. And I'm like, hey, I want my Subaru Outback back so I can look at my blind spot. So there's just it was a comfortability factor for him, I think, just something that he wasn't used to since he's been using that helmet since he got into the league. So I think that's really the biggest factor into it. But seeing it right now, man.
Are you surprised to see, because last week after the preseason game when they played the Rams in week one, John Gruden comes out there and he's like, I'm going to completely support Antonio Brown, blah, blah, blah. You know, kind of this good cop. And you're seeing now the bad cop from Mike Mayock. Was that expected? I mean, I think John Gruden's famous for being a bad cop, being a tough guy out there on the football field. And now, you know, Mike Mayock's out there taking his lumps, saying, you know, it's about time for this guy to make a decision if he's all in or all out. And the Raiders are kind of totally changing their tune in the public eye to the media, not something that we're exclusively going to see on Hard Knocks, something that's all over social media right now. Literally, I can't look at my Twitter page without seeing, you know, Mike Mayock talking into a camera about Antonio Brown. And it's crazy. That's how serious this has become, right? That's how serious this is. And now we're Antonio Brown has been in the news for a calendar year.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty incredible. And there's obvious, I think there's a bigger level of concern going on with Antonio Brown, maybe some issues. Obviously, we're not doctors or therapists here. We just pretend to be, obviously.
Right.
But I mean, to spin it back to the 49ers, 49er fans got to be somewhere kind of just kicking back with their popcorn, being chill with their White Claws right now, just hanging out, because this was a guy that, if we talked a couple months ago, 9 out of 10 49er fans would have banged the table to have Antonio Brown on their team. And now, I don't think those same 9 people are saying, no way. You know, it's kind of a crazy turn of events.
I think they're saying that right now, but also 49er fans, I think also, in the end, we do have to just wait until the regular season to see what actually happens. I don't think anyone was really expecting to see Antonio Brown in the preseason. And by the way, if you want to get in on the conversation, Chill Not About You, text line 957-95-888-957-9570. But right now, I'm expecting at least either Gruden or Carr to be on the phone with Antonio Brown right now and being like, look, dude, we brought you in here.
It's a bad look, man.
We brought you in here specifically because, look, one, we needed another wide receiver, a number one guy, because we traded away Amari Cooper at the bye week. Mm. But also, we need something to soothe the pain of Khalil Mack, because that sting is still there.
Yeah.
And Antonio Brown might have relaxed that sting a little bit, because coming in, you're getting an all-time wide receiver. And so I expect right now, John Gruden and Derek Carr, they better be on the phone with Antonio Brown just being like, look, man, we need you. Like, just use this helmet.
Yeah, and it's crazy all the stuff that we've heard about the Raiders, right? I feel like my entire life growing up here in the Bay Area, the Raiders have been a team of dysfunction. I know that hurts to say, but it's all offseason we heard how they loaded up, right? But then still there was stuff, you know, sending the scouts home before the combine or the draft or whatever. And we heard last year all these different kind of crazy rumors about John Gruden and even Reggie McKenzie, and dysfunction was a word that was brought up a lot. And now it just makes me think that, yeah, this maybe has a little bit to do with Antonio Brown. This is the reason why the Steelers wanted to get rid of a player that we all laughed at when they only got, what, a third and a fifth round pick or something.
Right.
They only had to give up a third and a fifth round pick. And
Yes. Everybody
was like, I can't believe that's all that it took for Antonio Brown. 49ers fans were furious. Why didn't John Lynch trade for that? Well, did John Gruden and Mike Mayock and Mark Davis not know what they were getting into with Antonio Brown? I mean, honestly, like, did the Steelers foist AB onto the Raiders? I mean, it seems like maybe now, just like they did with Martavis Bryant, you know, they're kind of just picking on them a little bit, because this guy is obviously not well.
Right. And well, the Steelers, they got they ended up feeling like they were free of Antonio Brown because he wanted a new contract. And his whole thing where he didn't play in week 16 or what was it, 17 or whatever,
just didn't show up.
Going into week 16, just didn't even show up against the Ravens. And that's really a ploy, and doing all this social media stuff, it was just a way for him to just get out of whatever that Steelers organization was going to give him, because they really weren't going to give him what he wanted. So right now, I think the Raiders at first, they thought, oh my God, we got a steal, just because this guy's been wilding out on social media and also during the NFL season and affecting the team. And they did know what they were getting with him, but I also don't think anyone in the NFL could have expected this, a helmet to be the issue.
Unbelievable. And I can't wait for Tuesday. And it seems like we've said this each week about Hard Knocks specifically, because, you know, even if this was happening in Cleveland or Green Bay or somewhere not locally, we would be so excited to see what happens on Hard Knocks, because of all this background information in week one and week two of Hard Knocks disappointed me a little bit. And we're going to see, like, is HBO a part of this, like, NFL Oakland Raiders propaganda where they're not going to go into this? Because I want to see I want to see on Tuesday Antonio Brown walk out of practice and leave and be like, no, I'm upset about my helmet. I want to see that on Tuesday. And if we don't, I'm going to be furious at HBO.
Well, you know what? We are going to see that on Tuesday because we looked this up. Now, they actually go into Monday. Mm. They go into Monday with everything that's happened during the week, and they make their complete edits on the Monday, and everything gets finalized. And then we will probably see this whole thing pop up. They didn't delve too deep into the helmet thing. They got into the foot thing.
They showed it here and there, but it's still, you know.
They showed his whoopee cushion foot onto the camera. Mm. But then the helmet thing, they just showed a news report from NFL Network that he's having issues with his helmet. But also, I think my main question coming out of this, too, is just what else? What are his other options? Like, it's either he came out and he said after week two, he came out after their second game and he said, basically, he wants people to stop speculating about him saying he's going to retire because it's affecting his family.
He loves football. He loves football. Yeah.
And his mom and dad are calling him, like, saying, hey, man, you're going to retire. What's happening with that? And he said, no, I never said that. Yeah. And they're seeing reports. But now it just seems like, what, you're going to get traded to another team? Well, they're going to still make you use the same helmet.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It's just a question of what other options do you have right now?
You bring up trade, and we're never going to see that happen, but it's funny to speculate at this point, knowing what we know now. So he had a third and a fifth round value. What's his value now? A compensatory sixth round pick or something like that? So that's not even really an option. And that's just crazy because, you know, this is one of the pound for pound baddest football players on the planet Earth. I mean, this guy, he changes games at every level, you know, special teams, catching the football, just being on the field. You know, that's why this Raiders offense was looked at to be a little bit better, because he frees up guys like Tyrell Williams, Hunter Renfro, if you want to talk about guys underneath, the tight ends that they have there and things like that. What he does for Derek Carr is incredibly unique as a football player. And you're looking at this guy, and we're talking about right now, what are the Raiders supposed to do with him? And that's so crazy, because think about it. You know, if we were having this conversation a year ago about Antonio Brown, you would be like, he's one of the best players in football. What are you talking about? He could do nothing wrong, kind of thing. And look, we're looking at it now, and it's like, it's not like he's been involved in the law or anything bad like that. It's literally these weird,
He hasn't made anyone question their moral compass when it comes to watching football, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And it's just, it's crazy the situation that the Raiders are in, and just the NFL, it's insane. I literally I'm at a loss for words, because it's just, I never in a million years expected it. And then when this was going on, the foot thing, you're kind of like, what? And then the helmet thing, what? And now this, you're like, are you serious? You know, right. Like it's literally, that's the best way to handle this. Like, this can't be serious. This is going to live on. If he misses games, this will live on with Randy Moss, Jamarcus Russell style Raider, you know, infamy, honestly.
You mean you think so? Jamarcus Russell infamy?
I mean, I do. If he doesn't play games, you know, I think this is bad. I mean, this is just a bad, bad look.
All right. Before we get to break here, real quick, do you think that we will see Antonio Brown on the field in a Raider uniform facing the Denver Broncos at home on Monday Night Football in week one?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
Just a short answer, yes?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Yeah. And from the 901 on the Chilton Auto Body text line, he's going to play and dominate. This helmet thing isn't for real. Well, this isn't
Mike Mayock,
anymore.
The Raiders.com is posting videos of Mike Mayock talking about Antonio Brown. It's very real.
This is a thing.
Yeah.
This is a thing that could happen. All right. We got a lot to discuss today, because we wanted to get into a lot, but then just this whole Antonio Brown situation, it just got brought upon us. But I do want to get more of your thoughts from training camp, Tommy, because some people, they may not understand who we are, who we are, just a couple of millennials who were just drinking White Claw in here, well, even though we're not drinking White, just smashing White Claw because of the Stone Cold scene that came off.
Yeah, and shout out to the texter who texted in Austin316.
Shout out to him. But
he got it.
We want to get into a little bit of Jimmy Garoppolo. He had that bad day at practice last Wednesday, and we want to talk about that a little bit. We're also going to talk to NFL writer for CBS Sports, Jeff Kerr, coming up at 4:15, as well as Jennifer Lee Chan, who covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area, at 5:15. Stick around with Stephen Langford and Tommy Call here on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah. Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Stephen Langford, Tommy Call, in with you on this, well, beautiful Sunday. Frankly, Tommy, I'm up at, 2:45 in the morning.
Yeah, how tired are you right now?
I'm not tired at all because I've just been sleeping the entire weekend and doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
But I am not used to seeing the sun about till I'm like awake for about 7 solid hours.
Yeah, I mean, I can't.
It's weird, man.
I can't really imagine. I'm an early riser too, but I mean, man, it's a beautiful day sitting here. Getting this shot, it's fun, man. I'm having a blast so far.
I just wanted to get that weather shout out in.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a must for radio, is just to get that weather.
You're saying it's a beautiful day out there? Yeah, we're seasoned pros. That's what we do.
Can't do that at 5 a.m. I just say, hey, it's dark outside.
I'm sorry to everybody that's up right now.
That's pretty much it. But Stephen Langford, Tommy Call, in with you. Tommy Call, he has been at training camp throughout from day one, and he's been doing some great work on it. And really, you guys should follow him on Twitter. You should follow him on Instagram because he's been posting videos. And
I love my slow motion videos.
I do.
It's kind of my brand.
I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo and get your thoughts overall on him. But first, your Instagram videos of the defensive line. One, that defensive line coach for the Niners seems pretty crazy.
Yeah, Chris Kocurek. It's what's even crazier about the whole thing is you don't think of anybody on the 49ers defensive line being this kind of wild man type of players. Even DeForest Buckner is a very calm, always has a smile on his face. We've seen Nick Bosa in his interviews, very just melatonin, almost eyes like glazed over half the time. When he's seriously though, Nick Bosa is not this super energetic guy behind a microphone. And then you have Chris Kocurek out there screaming in their faces, cursing, sweating profusely. I mean, just he must change his shirt 3 different times throughout the day, honestly. I mean, this dude, incredible. And then, and he's just in Nick Bosa's face screaming at him. And we talked to him about it, one of the days that he spoke in the media before he got his injury. And he was saying it's just a lot different than what he was used to at Ohio State because his Ohio State defensive line coach never even said a cuss word the entire time he was there. And now you have this guy flying off the handle every day in practice. And even Robert Sala talked about it to us, that saying, that's not fake. That's who he is. This guy's been a defensive line coach in the NFL for years now. You can't fake that to grown men kind of thing,
Right.
So it's a kind of an interesting approach, and he's must watch. If you go to training camp, while they're still there, must watch their defensive line coach.
You'll hear them from the opposite end of the football field.
Yeah. Well, there is music playing.
All right.
Yeah. So, but still, it's pretty classic. All the writers are there with their phones ready, to see what he's doing out there.
Kind of music they got going on out there.
It's a little bit of mix of everything. A lot of like rap. I think every day is a little different. But weirdly enough, every once in a while they'll throw some Blink-182 in there.
I mean, why not?
Yeah, why not? Millennials—they love Blink-182. I love Blink. My favorite band, probably.
I absolutely love Blink-182.
Yeah,
I actually just ordered Enema of the State right now on vinyl.
Wow!
As we were talking,
wow, and they got a new album coming out soon too.
They do. But also, sticking with the defensive line, Solomon Thomas. Dude looked jacked.
Yeah, man. I was speaking with Grant Cohn after the game.
Yeah.
The first preseason game, and Solomon Thomas was, he didn't play, but he's a guy that it's talked about because I think that this defensive line has looked like the best unit on the 49ers. I mean, they paid for it. They've drafted for it. It should be the best unit, right? Well, it's looked it in training camp so far. Eric Armstead, I thought, looked really, really well. DJ Jones, even Kentavious Street, the guy who was redshirted last year, they've all flashed at times. Just the one guy that I haven't seen or heard anything from is Solomon Thomas. And now with Nick Bosa down, with Dee Ford still injured, these guys are they're definitely going to be on, snap counts when they come back.
Right.
Solomon Thomas has to make, an impact. And he hasn't done it in the practices that I've been there. So that's why, I want to see what Jennifer Leachan says. And he's probably going to play tomorrow. And, we're really going to have to see versatility from him specifically now that Bosa is out. He's going to need to play on the edge on the wide nine. He's not going to be lining up heads up with a tackle or with a guard,
right,
where he might be a little more comfortable and can show off his strength. You're going to need to see him out on the edge because That's why they drafted him. His supposed versatility, we haven't seen that. And now the 49ers are kind of strangleholded to get that out of him.
And do you think there's like more pressure with him right now? Or do you think with Arik Armstead, who was a first round pick coming out of Oregon and was expected to do, the team wasn't expected to be all that great anyway before they signed Jimmy Garoppolo, so there wasn't that much pressure on him. But going into this season with the defensive lineman down now, Dee Ford, he's expected to come back make a comeback and be there for week one. But with Arik Armstead or Solomon Thomas, I mean, not even just how much more pressure is there on either one, but which one do you expect more from this upcoming
year? Well, I think you can go two ways about it, right? Where Arik Armstead, he has pressure on himself to land that big second contract, right? He wants to get paid. All these players do. Where that's personal pressure, where if he leaves and in this offseason, he's still going to get a check. Whereas Solomon Thomas probably feels the pressure from the organization specifically because, this is a guy they drafted super high that they need. It's not like they have the high expectations. They need to have those high expectations for him, and he needs to check that off. So I think, internally with the 49ers, the pressure is way higher on Solomon Thomas specifically because how much money this team spent on the defensive line and to try to bulk up their depth and all of those things. They probably knew Arik Armstead was going to walk. They wouldn't have the money to afford him by signing. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to still be on the books with a big number. So is Dee Ford, the rest of these guys, Quan Alexander, all those things. You sign those guys because you're comfortable maybe putting Arik Armstead into the position where he's going to have to ball out in a franchise, in a contract year type of thing, where Solomon Thomas, they need him to do something because look how high they drafted him. We've seen nothing. And now I'm talking right now, a couple weeks into training camp, still really nothing.
I mean, when we're talking about that defensive line, and I think really why they need to have the biggest impact is because the old saying goes, it starts in the trenches, right? So it's going to start with Dee Ford, hopefully Nick Bosa by week one, that's still questionable, and Solomon Thomas and DeForest Buckner just all getting pressure on the quarterback, and in turn helping the secondary at least get more than two interceptions and seven takeaways overall.
Well, that's exactly we don't confirm this. Just my theory is that's why John Lynch didn't maybe go and grab a corner in the second, third, or fourth round. That's why they didn't spend a ton of money on drafting defensive backs or safeties or anything like that, because they spent the money up front knowing, like you said, hopefully garnering more pressure each snap would help the secondary, right? It would help coverage. It would give them less time, kind of thing like that. And you have Richard Sherman on one side, and hopefully you have that leaves one side of the field open, and the pressure could kind of make up for that. But now they're in this situation again where they have to count on these guys that we haven't really seen a ton from. But I actually wanted to throw this to you, Steven, because we talked about, Jimmy Garoppolo throwing those five interceptions. Right. I said, the defensive line has looked incredible in training camp, especially with them all out there, with Dee Ford out there, with Nick Bosa. They were causing problems. And Kyle Shanahan spoke about it. They said, what's the biggest difference from this year to last with, Jimmy Garoppolo and the maybe sloppiness on offense?
Mm-hmm.
He said, they're getting to our passer way faster. The defensive line, the pressure is there every single rep kind of thing. So, yeah, he throws five interceptions. But is that maybe a positive for the defense?
Well, for me, that's the way I looked at it. It's training camp. I mean, if you're throwing five interceptions now, the consecutive part is really what got people going and made people nervous. But overall, training camp, man, it's just a learning experience for the most part, no matter who you are. I mean, unless you're a seasoned veteran and the greatest of all time, like Tom Brady, who also throws multiple interceptions in training camp practice. It's a way for not only for me, when I looked at it, I looked at it as a way that Jimmy Garoppolo can improve. He can look back at the film of their practice and see what he did wrong and improve upon those things. Because Jimmy Garoppolo, he's been put on this pedestal and he's been living up there. There hasn't been much. There hasn't been much criticism as far, unless it's from sports radio guys. But for the most part, nationally, it's just Jimmy Garoppolo's the guy. Jimmy Garoppolo's the guy. Oh, he's hurt. That's just he can't get on the field, so he'll be fine when he gets back. And right now, Jimmy Garoppolo, he's kind of been he's been upstanding there, like you know, like it's not like he doesn't feel like he can't make any mistakes, but I think he had a little bit of confidence going into it, considering he's actually done pretty well in the games that he's played in.
Yeah.
But this time, though, I feel like he's going to take a step back and realize, oh, man, there's actually something I need to improve on. And it's training camp. You can only really get better after training camp and making mistakes.
And it's kind of the perfect example of what training camp is, right? What the day before their first preseason game, Jimmy Garoppolo threw four straight touchdowns in the red zone period and looked pretty dynamic as a passer. And what I mean by that, using kind of different arm angles to get the football out, he looked pretty crafty there. He was reading all his routes. I mean, he hit Trent Taylor in the back of the end zone on a long drag where he had to come across the whole field to get there.
Right.
The next play, he ducked almost pivoted under the offensive lineman to jam a pass right into Trent Taylor again, who fell back into the end zone. You know, he lofted one over some defenders right into a basket catch for George Kittle. All that happened, looked really good. Probably his best day of practice. And then 5 interceptions this past week.
Right.
And everybody forgot about that 4 touchdown day, right? And then honestly, after tomorrow, whatever happens in the game, we're probably going to forget about this 5 interception day. I'm sure that's already forgotten about, you know, at practice in Denver this week kind of thing. So you got to take it for what it is. I mean, it's a mixture of things. You know, our producer Arden was asking us, you know, is that a good look for the defense maybe that they're getting this type of turnovers, because this team did horribly with turnovers in the past. So it might be a little bit of a good sign, right? But also, you never want to hear that from your quarterback. Five straight is... that's ugly.
Historically bad for the defense last season as far as turnovers and takeaways are concerned. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, aradio.com sports station. Sticking with Jimmy Garoppolo, though, Tommy Call and Stephen Langford are in with you. Tommy was at training camp since the beginning for the duration of it. We'll be in with you until 6 o'clock. Coming up, we'll be joined by Jeff Kerr, who is an NFL writer for CBS Sports. He'll be coming up at 4:15, while Jennifer Lee Chan, who covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area, will be joining us at 5:15. What, Tommy, was Jimmy Garoppolo's composure like as far as just doing his step or his dropbacks and a 5-step drop, 3-step drop, 7-step drop, whatever it was? What was his composure like? Because coming off an injury like that, I'm not going to say, like, NFL players, they're never scared. I don't ever want to put that label on an NFL player. Like, when it's hard to really say that because they're guys that are in the NFL, they're pros, but they can maybe be a little bit skittish.
Yeah, trigger happy would be a way I would put it. You know, stepping into the pocket on that leg with the ACL, you know, worrying about guys diving at your feet. There's a lot of, you know, rules and penalties that kind of protect that now, and you're obviously not doing that in practice. But still, you know, you want to see almost every single positive possible there. You don't ever want to see any type of flinch or hesitation or any type of, like, yips. I know that's kind of a weird thing to say, but you don't want to see him patting the football. You don't want to see him look a little flustered. And I don't think that's Antonio Brown. Sorry, his name just popped up.
Yeah.
I don't think that's Jimmy Garoppolo's game, right? He's never been the skittish style kind of trigger happy guy. Now he's dealt with some injuries. Now he's playing behind an offensive line, Steven, that we haven't even really gotten into yet, and we wanted to talk about today. That's looking not good. You know, that offensive line is sketchy. No Western Richburg. What is Ben Garland going to do as the center? You know, that's going to have an impact on Jimmy Garoppolo right away. We talked about it. You're playing against Vita Vey. You're playing against Ndamukong Suh. Week one in Tampa Bay.
Right.
You know, and then they play is the Steelers next?
Steelers, Browns. I got to look at the schedule fully. But
a bunch of nasty interior defensive linemen.
Right.
And look at how good the Eagles were, how they won Super Bowl. They won that Super Bowl. They changed defenses by putting so much pressure up the interior. That's something I feel like any listener who's listened to me talk about football on this station has heard me brought up interior pressure. That's why I wanted the 49ers to draft Quinnen Williams, because I think that is the face of defensive football. You want to create pressure up the middle with those defensive linemen. And now you have Mike Person, who's maybe injured. They're saying his ankle was taped too tight or something like that as to why he was on crutches one day. Ben Garland is probably going to be your starter for week one unless you hear some Western Richburg miracle comeback.
Right.
And then you haven't heard anything from Josh Garnett. He's basically been given up on, it seems like, by a lot of 49er fans. Can any of these guys protect Jimmy up the middle? And that directly correlates to him potentially being a little trigger happy. He's got to know that these guys aren't, you know, that's a little scary, having lining up against Ndamukong Suh, your first game back from injury. You know, we're going to see it tomorrow night when they play Denver. It's going to be something to watch.
How many drives do you want to see Jimmy Garoppolo tomorrow night as we just transition here? Because with that offensive line,
yeah.
I mean, regardless of what anyone says, that defensive line for the Broncos, I don't know what their plans are as far as putting the starters out there. I don't know if they're going to start out with Von Miller and Bradley Chubb and then Derek Wolf also on the interior. I don't know if they're going to start out with those guys or even play those guys. Really, I mean, if you're the Broncos, I wouldn't play those guys a lick just because, I mean, maybe Bradley Chubb, but Von Miller, you know what you're going to get with him going into the season. You don't want to risk injury, but how often do you want to see Jimmy Garoppolo play in this second game against the Broncos?
Well, I would want to see him play at least, you know, four drives, whether that equals out to a quarter, you know, or not around there, but just because it's been so long, right? That's why this, you know, you need to get him, you know, you don't want any rust, right? And I'm not saying that there is, but I don't see that happening. That's just what we want to see. We want to be able to analyze what Jimmy is now. But what I know about Kyle Shanahan and all the injuries that's happened already in this training camp, not even talking about past years with the 49ers.
Right.
I don't see him playing maybe one to two drives, honestly. You know, Kyle Shanahan said if he could punt all four games, he would. So, of course, he's not going to put his franchise quarterback. Shanahan knows he's directly linked to this guy. If he goes, think about it. If Jimmy Garoppolo were to get hurt tomorrow, everybody would be like, Kyle, why did you play him? Right. Why did you play him? You know what I mean? It's almost so we all know these kind of things, you know, but it would be nice to see him out there, obviously, to see where he's at. But overall, I mean,
dude, if you could keep him in just for two drives.
Yeah.
I think that's a success because if they keep him in for four drives or just well into, I mean, even if they keep him in towards the second quarter, you know, I think at that point, that's when you're going to be a little, it's preseason, so you can only put so much stock into.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.